Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1824 with a release date of July 27, 2012 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, the International Amateur Radio Union, to vote on admitting two new members. Solar Cycle 24 heats up with a massive East Coast VHF band opening. The London 2012 Olympics ham radio stations take to the air, and four new ham radio CubeSats go skyward. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1824 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
The International Amateur Radio Union could have two new members before year's end. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, is here with the details.
The Federation of Radio Sport of Azerbaijan, or FRSA, and the Grenadine Amateur Radio Club are being proposed for membership in the International Amateur Radio Union. The FRSA, based in Baku, has so far 50 members. The Grenadine Amateur Radio Club has 21 members. Both have made their proposals through IARU Region 2 for membership. The International Amateur Radio Union calendar notes that the groups have declared that they can satisfy the requirements of the IARU Constitution and bylaws. As such, their proposed membership has been put up to the vote by all International Amateur Radio Union member societies who have until November 1st to cast the ballot. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, near Berwick, Pennsylvania.
Meantime, Jim Linton, VK3PC, reports on two International Amateur Radio Union member certifications that have been rescinded. Linton says that despite a request, no proof have been provided that the former PNGARS of Papua New Guinea and BARTS in Burma or Myanmar still exist and have been withdrawn from membership. They're calling it one of the best VHF band openings since the late 1950s. This as hams along the eastern seaboard and south central states report what appears to be both a tropospheric duct and some double-hop E-layer skip that permitted QSOs from Vermont south to Tennessee and Texas on bands as high as 220 megahertz Tuesday, July 24th. One interesting report came to us from Kevin Duplantis, W4KEV. He says that at about 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in Knoxville, Tennessee, that he was tuning around the FM broadcast band when he stopped on WRJK 106.7. That's when he heard a commercial that seemed out of place, so he kept listening. It turned out that instead of WRJK, he was hearing a station identifying as 106.7 The Wizard, Burlington, Vermont. After a number of fades, the Vermont station came back so strong that it totally wiped out the local Knoxville station that was only 15 miles away. At that point, W4KEV reports that he took to the 2-meter band where he made what he describes as a ton of contacts into the northeast U.S. and southeast Canada, some well over 1,000 miles distant. Then he switched to the 222 megahertz band where he noted a definite E-skip opening that lasted a solid half hour. During this time, he heard Canadian stations make contact with the lower parts of Alabama and Mississippi. W4KEV says that they don't get too many tropo openings in his area, so this was a thrill to say the least. Meantime, the DXWorld.com propagation logger for 2 meters shows several likely record-breaking contacts in sheer numbers, if nothing else. By way of example, Mike Larson, KC0CF in Stanhope, Iowa, posted that he worked 32 stations from Florida to Virginia during the opening, and his report was just one of many. In all, it appears as if July 24, 2012 is one that will go down in the VHF and UHF record books, and operators worldwide are hoping it's only a precursor of what may be soon to come in DX in the world above 50 megahertz. The 2012 Summer Olympics are on the ham radio airwaves. On Wednesday, July 25th, two special event call signs were activated in the United Kingdom to celebrate the London 2012 Olympics and Paralympic Games. Take a listen.
Many thanks for coming along to the opening ceremony today of 2 Oscar 12 London, the special event call sign by the Cray Valley Radio Society. This is a special event amateur radio station to celebrate the London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games.
As previously reported here on Amateur Radio Newsline, 2012L will operate from London, while 2012W was to take to the ham bands from Bury in Wales. Both stations will be on the air through August 12th for the games themselves and will continue operations through September 9th. Updates on both operations will be available on the Twitter social networking site using the screen names of @2012L and @GW0ANA, respectively. Organizers hope to make 80,000 or more contacts during the time that 2012L and 2012W are on the air. It's yakety yak time on the 70-centimeter band near San Diego, California. This as a new radio system takes to the air on a military base. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the rest of the story.
Southern California's Fallbrook Amateur Radio Club reports that it recently began receiving a random ticking interference superimposed over weak incoming signals on its 440.600 MHz repeater inputs channel. Club members have tentatively located the signal as originating at the nearby Marine Corps Camp Pendleton. Fallbrook is north of San Diego and not far from the Marine base. It now appears as if the base has deployed a number of Enhanced Position Location Reporting System radios, or EPLRS devices, that use the entire 420 to 450 MHz band in a spread spectrum mode. As hams share the 420 to 450 MHz band with the U.S. government, and the government has priority, it's likely the Fallbrook ham community will have to live with the problem until such time as the devices are turned off, if that ever occurs. As noted, hams are secondary users in the 420 to 450 MHz band and must accept any and all interference from those designated as primary users. Also, the amateur community must not in any way interfere with the operations of those assigned as primary users. In this case, the United States military. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
According to the Southgate News, it's believed that at least two dozen EPLRS systems are slated for deployment or are already deployed across the continental United States, as well as Alaska and Hawaii. The price of a vanity ham radio call sign is going up. On July 20th, the FCC announced that the cost of a set of amateur radio vanity call letters will increase 80 cents to $15 for a 10-year license term. That works out to 8 cents a year for anyone applying for or renewing a vanity ham radio call. The new fee goes into effect 30 days after notice of the increase is published in the Federal Register. And as we go to air, that publication is still pending. The FCC wants to overhaul its entire regulatory fee system and is asking for public input on that effort through MD Docket 08-65. According to the agency, extensive changes have occurred in the communications marketplace since its current system for assessing and collecting regulatory fees for all of the entities it regulates was enacted in 1994. Commissioner Robert McDowell calls the reform long overdue, adding that the agency should update its fee structure to ensure that they're levied not only in a fiscally prudent manner, but in a non-discriminatory and competitively neutral way. Comments to MD Docket 08-65 are due 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. What impact such a reevaluation might have on regulatory fees imposed on radio amateurs is impossible to assess at this time. Japan's HTV-3 cargo vessel carrying 5 satellites blasted off on an H-2B rocket to the International Space Station in the early hours of Saturday, July 21st. On board were 4 amateur radio CubeSats along with a scientific satellite known as Reiko. The ham radio birds are the F-1, WeWish, FitSat-1, and TechEdSat CubeSats. By way of background, the F-1 CubeSat carries a pair of Yaesu VX-3R handheld transceivers to provide communications on 145.980 MHz and 437.485 MHz FM using AX.25 packet radio data. FitSat-1 is an optical communications experiment that, as previously reported, will attempt to write Morse code across the night sky, although only when in range of Japan. It will also transmit CW on 437.250 MHz, FM AX.25 data on 437.445 MHz, and high-speed data on 5840.00 MHz. WeWish will transmit on 437.505 MHz FM AX.25 data, while TechEdSat will transmit on 437.465 MHz and will also communicate via the Iridium and Orbcomm satellite phone networks. This is a first for a CubeSat. The CubeSats will remain on the International Space Station until September. That's when they'll be deployed to orbit by Japanese astronaut Akihiko Hoshide, KE5DNI, using the ISS robot arm. And we'll have more ham radio space-related news later on in this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W9AA, Hamfesters Amateur Radio Club Net, serving Bridgeview, Illinois. The FCC has issued a $12,500 notice of apparent liability to monetary forfeiture to Glenn S. Yamada of Kenai, Alaska. This based on allegations that he essentially operated his CB station in a manner that interfered with international aviation traffic. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details. Norm?
This story goes back to last January. That's when the FCC received a complaint regarding interference to an authorized user on 21.964 megahertz in the aeronautical band. According to the regulatory agency, the problem concerned a male subject talking and interfering with control and monitoring of air traffic over the North Atlantic. The FCC's High Frequency Direction Finding Center was called into action. On January 31st, its operators observed a subject matching the details of the complaint, transmitting on 21.965 megahertz using the call sign 1600 Alaska. Of even more interest, the actual operating frequency was 27.025, better known as CB Channel 6. Subsequently, an agent from the FCC's Enforcement Bureau in Anchorage used direction-finding techniques and found the source of the interfering signal to be coming from the residence of Glenn S. Yamada. The agent, accompanied by a local police officer, inspected Yamada's station on February 6. At that time, the agent found a non-certified CB transmitter and a linear amplifier as part of Yamada's CB station. During questioning, Yamada admitted to the agent that the linear amplifier was capable of generating a power output level of 200 watts. The agent observed that the transmitter and the linear amplifier were connected to a transmission cable and ultimately to the directional antenna in the back of Yamada's residence. Yamada told the agent that this was his hobby setup and that he had been operating it for the last several weeks using the made-up call of 1600 Alaska. Now, in its July 14th finding, authorizing the proposed $12,500 fine, the FCC says that Yamada apparently, willfully, and repeatedly violated Section 301 of the Communications Act of 1934 and Sections 95409A and 95411A-1 and B of the FCC rules. This by operating his CB radio without requisite commission authorization. In simpler terms, it means that his station equipment was not FCC certified and he was running power in excess of the maximum allowed on the 11-meter band. And when it issued the notice of apparent liability, the regulatory agency also stated that given the public safety concerns of the violations that it has directed Yamada to submit a statement signed under penalty of perjury confirming whether he is still engaged in CB operations. If so, he is to state whether he is using a certified CB transmitter. Also to certify that he has not attached any linear amplifiers to his CB station. Yamada must submit this statement to the FCC office in Anchorage no later than August 17th. That is the same day when the payment of the $12,500 notice of apparent liability is also due. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
As is usual in these cases, Yamada was given the customary 30 days from issuance of the proposed fine to file an appeal. The FCC levied two unrelated fines for tower violations. In the first action, the agency says that Equity Communications, licensee of WCMCAM in Wildwood, New Jersey, failed to enclose its tower in a locked fence. In issuing the proposed $17,000 fine, the FCC noted that during an inspection in 2011, agents with the Philadelphia Enforcement Bureau determined that the tower was in a residential neighborhood, but what it called the remnants of a fence would not restrict access to it. At a later date, when they reinspected, the agents found the fence in the same condition. As such, the FCC has proposed the fine for the ongoing infraction. The other case involves JMK Communications, which was fined $7,000 for not having a locked fence around the four-tower array for WPWCAM in Dumfries, Virginia. The FCC says that during an inspection in 2011, the Enforcement Bureau agents found no fencing around the base of one structure and only partial fencing around the base of the other three. There was also no perimeter fence around the property, according to the commission. In this matter, the FCC has proposed a $7,000 fine. It's also directed the licensee to submit a sworn statement telling the commission the broadcaster is now in compliance with tower regulations. Both companies were given the customary 30 days from the date the notices of apparent liability were issued to pay or to file a response. The FCC issued a total of $55,000 in proposed fines to three men whom it says operated unlicensed broadcast stations in the state of Florida. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is here with more.
In the first two cases, the regulatory agency alleges that Michael Downer and Damian Allen operated an unauthorized station together on the FM broadcast band in the city of Pompano Beach. According to the FCC, it used direction-finding techniques to trace the signal to an FM transmitting antenna located atop a storage room of a commercial property. The property owner told the agency he had rented the space to Downer and Allen. The owner then called Downer and handed the phone to the agent. Shortly thereafter, the other renter, Damian Allen, came and removed the equipment. Now, as they say, it's time to pay the piper. While the base fine for operating an unauthorized station is $10,000 per person, the FCC has proposed a $20,000 fine per person for Downer and Allen. This because the commission had previously issued several notices of unlicensed operation to both men, this for operating unlicensed stations in other Florida locations. The FCC says the fact that they continued operating constitutes a deliberate disregard for the commission's rules. In the third case, the commission is proposing a $15,000 fine against MacArthur Bussey, this for operating an unlicensed station on 89.1 MHz in the city of Fort Lauderdale. In this matter, the agents not only traced the signal to the residence leased by Bussey, but also found a fan page ad on Facebook for the illegal station and a picture that matched Bussey's Florida's driver's license photo. The domain name for the website, www.891radio.net, was found to be registered to Bussey's residence. Bussey's fine was also over the $10,000 base amount, this because the Miami Office of Enforcement had previously issued a notice of unlicensed operation to him for operating an unlicensed station on the same frequency, but from a different location. For the Amish Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
All three have the customary 30 days from the date the fines were proposed to pay them or to file appeals. Ohio's West Chester Amateur Radio Club has set up a working ham radio station at the closed-down Voice of America relay station in Bethany, Ohio. A temporary single position has been activated in the VOA building. It's connected to a temporary trailer-mounted beam antenna. The Bethany site is located not far from Dayton, Ohio. According to the club website, more funding is needed to complete the project. Information about this project can be found online at www.wc8voa.org. The history of the Voice of America Bethany Relay Station is online at www.voamuseum.org. The MCOM East Emergency Communications Conference will not be held in 2012. According to an announcement from the Board of Directors for Monroe County Aries, which hosts the event, they've decided to postpone MCOM East until the fall of 2013 due to circumstances beyond their control. According to their news release, the group is running into a fistful of scheduling conflicts that are making it difficult to plan an emergency communications conference that is of the same quality as the conferences that they've hosted in years past. That's because they have several competing events in the region that will significantly take away from normal attendance. Also, their call for programs did not have enough responses to fill all the slots needed for this year's conference. Monroe County, New York ARES says that it will be announcing its plans for 2013 early next January. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact them by email to info@mcomeast.org or simply keep an eye out on www.mcomeast.org for updates. And you spell that emcomeast.org. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Hawaii's legendary VHF-UHF experimenter Paul Lieb, KH6HME, has been laid to rest following a Catholic Mass Saturday, July 21st. The service was attended by Lieb's family, friends, and several dozen ham radio operators. Many of the latter were members of California's San Bernardino Microwave Society, of which Lieb was a longtime member. A number of the radio amateurs drove many hours to attend the service. According to his longtime friend Gordon West, WB6NOA, Leaves Ham Radio activities played a major part in the memorial service. This included the front cover of a written remembrance program showing KH6HME at the Mauna Loa Beacon site door that was etched with visiting ham radio call signs. Below his name was his KH6HME call. At the end of the Mass, each of the six candles surrounding Lieb were extinguished one by one. West says that this signified the end of an era when Paul would head for the 8,200-foot site on the Mauna Loa volcano. From there, he would switch from beacon mode to voice and CW and complete the 2,500-mile path on every VHF and UHF band from 6 meters up through 5 gigahertz. KH6HME was buried at the Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Orange, California. West says that the very last line of the memorial program read, and we quote, "He will never be forgotten, and his beacon will continue to delight and amaze us all." 73, Paul. As reported last week, Paul Lieb, KH6HME, passed away Sunday night, July 15th, while visiting his sister and other relatives on the U.S. mainland. Spanish radio hams have used two low-cost handheld FM transceivers to build a cross-band repeater, which they then launched to the edge of space on a high-altitude balloon. The radios used in the experiment were identified as Luther TL-44, but appear identical to the popular Baofeng UV-3R available on eBay from many online dealers worldwide at a cost of between $30 and $45 each. The balloon flight lasted 2 hours, 44 minutes, during which 179 contacts were made. The furthest was over a distance of 670 kilometers. You can read the entire story in electronically translated English at tinyurl.com/Baofeng-repeater, and you spell Baofeng, B-A-O-F-E-N-G. NASA astronaut Joe Acaba, KE5DAR, will play disc jockey in space on Friday, August 3rd. That's when he'll do a live remote from the International Space Station as part of a two-hour music and talk show to be streamed over internet station Third Rock Radio. Third Rock Radio is calling this outing the Joe Show. It describes it as a blend of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics and art. And for those not aware, Third Rock Radio is a project of Houston, Texas radio veterans. It's produced under a NASA Space Act agreement with RFC Media. The Joe Show is mainly aimed at younger Americans. It can be heard as an audio stream at thirdrockradio.net, with Acaba's appearance beginning at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, as we said, Friday, August 3rd. On the air, Alex Landy, IW5ELA, says that he'll be on the air stroke 3B8 from Hotel Le Cananier in Mauritius between September 6th and the 12th. This is part of an extended honeymoon trip with his wife, Michaela, that will take them through Corsica, Mongolia, Finland, and Africa. From Mauritius, this operation will be on 20, 17, 15, and 12 meters using CW and SSB. Because of the nature of this trip, all operation is holiday style. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. And lest we forget, the couple does have a webpage. You can visit it online at honeymoonafrica2012.jimdo.com. A new transatlantic 2-meter propagation beacon is well on its way to becoming a reality. RSGB newsreader Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has the latest. Jeremy?
Brian, WA1ZMS is making the final preparations to ship the GB3WGI144MEGS transatlantic beacon transmitter over to Northern Ireland, thanks to the kind donation of antenna parts and clamps from G4CQM at Powerbeam Antennas. Beacon keeper Gordon, GI680Z, is in the process of building the antenna system for the beacon and installing the emergency shutdown system. It's hoped to have the beacon up and running before the end of the year. This comes to you from G4NJH in Nottingham.
Once the beacon is placed into service, it'll act as a marker to tell hams in the Americas when a 2-meter path is open to the UK and possibly beyond. NDX F4EZG will be active between September 1st and 3rd from Madagascar as 5R8VE. Operations will only be on 20 and 15 meters, QSL via F4EZG. EA2BD will be active from Malta as 9H3BD until July 30th. His operations are low power on 20 meters using CW and SSB, QSL via his home EA2BD call sign. WB60JB is on the air from Botswana as A25JB through the end of July. He can be heard on 40 through 10 meters using mostly SSB with some CW. QSL this station direct to his WB60JB call sign. JJ2NYT will be active stroke FK from Grande Terre, New Caledonia between July 29th and August 2nd. His operation will be on 40 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. Like the last two, QSL this one via his home call sign. G3SWH will activate the special call sign M0RSE on CW only over the weekend of August 18th and 19th. As you might expect, this is a CW-only operation with QSOs to be uploaded to Logbook of the World immediately after the weekend operation concludes. Special QSLs will be available via the Bureau or direct with self-addressed stamped envelope, inadequate return postage, or even via the traditional Bureau route. Lastly, members of the Jimalang Amateur Radio Club and the Mediterraneo DX Club will team up to sponsor a de-expedition to Brunei. The multinational team will be on the air as V-84SMD between November 11th and the 23rd. Operations will be on 160 through 10 meters, including the 30, 17, and 12-meter bands. Modes to be supported are CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL via IK2VUC direct or via the Bureau. And finally this week, word that what some call green power might not be so green after all. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, reports.
Research in the United States has shown that large wind turbine farms used to generate so-called green power might have a warming effect on the local climate, and thereby casting a shadow over the long-term sustainability of wind power. It's been long believed that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels contribute to the so-called global warming effect. Some scientists believe this could lead to the melting of glaciers, sea level rise, crop failure, and other devastating effects. So, in an effort to cut such emissions, many nations are moving towards cleaner energy sources, such as wind power. Now, researchers at the State University of New York at Albany have analyzed over the period 2003 to 2011 the satellite data of areas around large wind farms in Texas, where four of the world's largest farms are located. The results published in the journal Nature Climate Change showed a warming trend of up to 0.72 degrees Celsius per decade in areas over the farms. This as compared with nearby regions without the farms. The study attributed this warming primarily to wind farms. It says that the temperature change could be due to the effects of the energy expelled by farms and the movement and turbulence generated by turbine rotors. It concluded that these changes, if spatially large enough, may have noticeable impacts on local to regional weather and climate. That said, the researchers say that more studies are needed at different locations and for longer periods before any firm conclusions could be drawn. Previous research in 2010 by other U.S. scientists found wind farms could make the nights warmer and days cooler in their immediate vicinity, but those effects could be minimized by changing turbines' rotor design or by building the farms in areas with high natural climatic turbulence. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lessig, K9VIK in Zion, Illinois.
According to the Global Wind Energy Council, in 2011, the world's wind farms had the capacity to produce 238 gigawatts of electricity at any one time. That was a 21% rise over 2010, and capacity is expected to reach nearly 500 gigawatts by the end of 2016 as more and bigger wind farms are built. More on this story is online at tinyurl.com/wind-farm-warming. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the AWRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. You can find more information at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. That's at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. And this note to listeners who tune into Amateur Radio Newsline using our podcast audio feature. We've updated the links to the iTunes and RSS feed for our weekly report, and you'll need to resubscribe in your podcast listening device using the new links available at www.arnewsline.org in the right-hand column. Simply click on the link that affects you and perform the resubscription process as required by each service. And we thank you for being an important part of the Amateur Radio Newsline family. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk in Los Angeles. From South Mississippi, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.